a small query to a DDoS, to a DNS server, and the response that is prearranged in there is a 4,000 byte text record, and that is then directed to the target, to the system under attack. And I believe, if I remember from a couple of years ago, the amplification is on the order of 70 to 1. Whereas the amplification of sending a query and getting back a signed answer is, 3, 4, 5 to 1 or something like that, but not anywhere near as big as that. All right. Happy to have a discussion about all this. Here's some real issues, and I've organized them into four groupings. The Public Interest Registry, which runs .org, put a formal application into ICANN for permission to run DNSSEC, and ICANN performed an intensive study. Some of the people, I know that some of the people who were on there on that study are here at this meeting, but I don't know, I can't see well enough with the lights in my eyes. Roy, you were on that? Yep. And who else? Anybody else? So let me invite you, if I misstate any of the things that relate to that, to chime in here. So that was a quite thorough and deliberately intensive raising of all of many possible problems, and I want to lay those out and categorize them for you. A different issue, which in a peculiarly fortuitous way was raised accidentally here in Sweden, is that end-user devices are not all, that we're talking about small office, home office, routers, and firewalls, are not necessarily compatible with DNSSEC, either for reasons of packet length or some of the flags and values. That got uncovered because one of the versions of Bind accidentally returned signed answers, whether they were requested or not, and that formed a stress test on the end systems. And I'll talk a bit more about that. Another category of issues are what I'll call chicken and egg problems, that we can't get started because this isn't done, and we can't do that because this isn't done, and so forth, and I'll come back. And then a more recent topic that has come to attention and I think is going to require a certain amount of attention is the complications that arise when you have to have IPv4 networks and IPv6 networks interacting with each other as we bring IPv6 online more and more, as we exhaust IPv4 addresses, and we have to work out the coexistence issues between those two technologies. So those are the main areas. Okay, so the RSTEP report, as I said, looked at .org's request, and looked at many possible problems, and although it raised a large number of possible concerns, the net effect was a recommendation to go forward, which they have. And so that was the output of the RSTEP report, and then the ICANN board, the ICANN staff, and then the ICANN board approved it, and PIR is actively getting their system ready for DNSSEC, and I don't think they've made formal announcements, but over the course of early next year, there'll be initial implementations, initial deployment, and then progressively. So I've taken the main points and spread them over three slides. There's quite a few of them, and added four columns, which are labeled A, B, C, and D, which are an assessment, and I'll save the embarrassment of anybody else. I'll just call these my assessments of where those possible objections fit. So A is no action is actually needed. The threat isn't really credible. B is a variant of that, that is very improbable. C is this would be reasonable to be concerned about, but ought to be shaken out during configuration and testing. That is, indeed, it's possible to make a mistake, but competent operation would not lead you down that path. And then the fourth area are ones where there are is indeed some residual work to be done. So those are the answers, if you will, to these questions. All right, so here's, do I know how to go backwards? There we go. I got it. Thank you. First of all, taking a broad look, what you see there is that out of, eight items listed on that slide, half of them are in column A, another half of the rest are in column C, which means that they should be taken care of during normal testing, and only two are ones that require some follow-up action. The RSTEP report spent a lot of time complaining about the lack of assigned route and the consequences and complications that that brings. I think there's no question that the route needs to be signed. Everybody wants that. On the other hand, the route is a single node, and there will be lots and lots of nodes that are not signed all at once, and we're going to have to deal with holes in the tree, whether or not they're at the top or elsewhere. So there's a more general issue of how does one deal with the holes in the tree. The route is special in the sense that it performs a very important political signal, and but otherwise, in a very real engineering sense, it's just one more node, and the fact that it's not signed means that its children don't have a signed parent, and there are only a few hundred children of the route, whereas an unsigned TLD has anywhere from thousands to hundreds of thousands to millions of children, and so very rapidly could have more signed children than the route could possibly have. Another factor that was pointed out was that a weak link in the existing affairs that is the registrars are important in moving keying information from registrants up to the top-level domain. And I've been pleased to hear today about the focus of attention in a number of talks about getting registrars organized and working. We have an effort, part of my life is funded by U.S. Department of Homeland Security for deployment of DNSSEC, and we've been working with one small registrar to get them up to speed so that there's at least one pathway, and the other registrars, I suspect, will fall into line when it's clear that there's some demand from registrants who want to, if they move their registration over to a DNSSEC compliant registrar, then that's a reasonably strong signal. What are the other ones on this slide? DS records have to be transmitted reliably. Yes, of course they do. PIR is not requiring a key change when a registrar changes. The putative issue there is that a registrant changes which registrar they're using. So this, first of all, assumes that there's multiple registrars, which there will be. And the PIR does not have a policy forcing a key change. I don't think that's where the right leverage is. I don't think that they necessarily need to do that. It's really up to the registrant and the registrars, depending upon who's controlling the keys. And so that leads to a discussion about whether the registrars are running the name servers for the registrant or whether the registrant is running his own name server. So I think that's sort of misplaced. The last item on here is that the signing interval of the DS record must be consistent with the time to live and other timing constraints. That's absolutely a correct comment. More broadly, there is not yet enough documentation. There's quite a bit, but not yet enough documentation of the multiple timing constraints that all have to be taken into account. I'm working with Olafur Gudmundsson on a timing paper which builds on a lot of the prior work, and my hope is that we'll have a version ready for circulation shortly. that attempts to put all of the various timing constraints into a framework. Although here today, the idea of how often to resalt is something that had not been on my, I think that was the, did you raise that? Maybe that was an earlier talk today. I'm a little jet lagged, so I'm not keeping careful track. But I thought that was an interesting timing issue. There is another aspect to all of this timing stuff, which is it creates a great deal of apparent complexity. And if that complexity is passed along to the users or to the system administrators with here's what all the knobs that you have to fix, here's all the parameters to set, and you figure it out, I think that that is in itself a fairly large threat to the deployment of DNSSEC, that what we need is a much smaller, more compact, and sensible set of guidance in the form of here's what the parameters should be, or here's a couple of packages, or whatever. But the number of moving parts visible to the administrators should be much smaller. And my hope is that we will reduce this down to a sensible and realistic set of policies. So here's the second batch. And again, not by any pre-calculation, only two of the, I guess there's still eight on this, are in the needs more work. And those two are that emergency key rollover is problematic in the absence of assigned root. That is true for any zone that is signed whose parent isn't signed. And Jelda, you covered this basically in what you said. And the best answer we have is RFC 5011. The one marked in column D on this slide is that the registrants may neglect maintenance. Let me translate that a little bit. Registrants, there being many, many, many registrants, cover the full spectrum of those who are very careful and conscientious about doing what needs to be done to maintain their zone, and at the other end of the spectrum, many who do not. The ones who do not make all kinds of errors, lame assignments, name servers that stop working and they don't pay attention to them, and so forth. And in that respect, DNSSEC simply adds to the list of more things to be concerned about and hence more ways in which things can fail. And I think that's the right perspective. It's not worse than that, although that's bad enough. So whether or not that is enough added complexity to be a qualitative difference is something that we'll have to see emerge. If it is,